On December 17th, 2010, Mohamed Bouazizi, a 26-year-old street vendor in Tunisia, was harassed, beaten, and humiliated by police for selling vegetables in the street without a permit, which is a euphemistic way of saying he failed to bribe the right people. Shortly after this utterly dehumanizing incident, in which his entire stock of produce was taken and his pushcart, his only source of income, was ransacked, Bouazizi, in an act of protest against mindless government brutality and corruption, doused himself in gasoline and set himself aflame. The story of Bouazizi's self-immolation and martyrdom became a rallying cry for the Arab world, a rallying cry quite naturally carried on the fastest and most efficient communication substrate available, Twitter, Facebook, and various blogs, to become the call to action that ignited a series of revolutions and uprisings that became the Arab Spring, also known as the Arab Awakening, a veritable tsunami of human bravery and courage and sacrifice that toppled decades of dictatorial rule in Tunisia, Egypt, and Libya, and also rewrote the equations of the balance of power in Bahrain, Syria, Yemen, and almost every other country throughout the Middle East. Here at home, the Occupy Wall Street movement, which started in New York City, but has since blossomed into a massive global act of peaceful protest against corruption, drew direct inspiration from the Arab Spring and ultimately from Mohamed Bouazizi. And whether you agree with any of these events or you are repulsed by them, you have to admit that they only exist in their present form, hyper-accelerated form, because of the internet. These events might have happened without the internet, but surely not as explosively. When humans communicate, revolutions happen. Humanity, like the internet, treats censorship and oppression as an error condition and roots around it. Each and every one of these clashes has met with violent resistance from the governments who lay claim to the right to make the rules for the people they ostensibly serve. And in each and every case, the government has attempted to quash these uprisings by doing one thing, shutting down the internet. Kill the lines of communication, cut off the blood flow, and you starve the tumor, or so the theory goes. I grew up in Bangor, Maine, and I first set foot in the city of Orlando in the spring of 1985, at more or less the same time future produce salesman Mohamed Bouazizi would have been celebrating his first birthday. In 1985, I was a freshman majoring in computer science at the University of Maine, and for a couple of years, I had already been an avid user of an obscure computing resource that we did not yet call the internet. And what was cool about the obscure computing resource that we did not yet call the internet in 1985 was that you could use it to send text messages. You could chat with people on it. Just like on Facebook today, you could type in, message brent@maine.edu. Hey dude, Jeet yet? And I could reply, message back, nope, let's squeak. And thereby lunch and fellowship would occur. But even cooler thing about the obscure computing resource that we did not yet call the internet in 1985 was that you could use it to send text messages to just about anyone on just about any computing system attached to it. Like some folks were attached to it down the road from here in the computer science department at the University of Central Florida. Look, if you're too terribly much under the age of 35, you have no idea what personal communications were like in 1985, but we were pretty much blind, deaf, and mute, okay? I mean, you couldn't just pick up the phone in Bangor, Maine and call someone in Orlando, Florida without incurring something we called long-distance charges, which I assure you were prohibitively expensive for a college freshman in 1985. The kind of computing power you and I are now carrying in our pockets was then only available to an anointed class of high priests who knew how to cast the spells and perform the arcane rituals designed to cleanse evil spirits from the inner sanctums of massive rooms filled with refrigerator-sized boxes of computing equipment and their climate control systems. So the ability to sit down at an 80 by 24 green screen terminal at the University of Maine and type out a message that would instantly appear on somebody's 80 by 24 green screen terminal at the University of Central Florida was the epitome of cool in 1985, okay? I mean, it was the apotheosis of cool. And my first collegiate spring break in 1985 was spent on Daytona Beach, hanging out with some UCF students, the entire tenure of my friendship with whom, up until that point, had been comprised entirely of a series of green text messages carried over the obscure computing resource we did not yet call the internet. I may be the first bona fide example of true friendship forged and intermediated entirely over a digital substrate. I may be the first guy who ever got a date on the internet. So what do Mohamed Bouazizi and I have in common? Nothing. Okay, nothing. He's the very definition of a hero, and I, back in 1985, I'm just a dude looking for a party. I could never flambé myself for a cause, okay? I mean, let me just get that out there right now, okay? If you're looking for a martyr, I'm not your Huckleberry, okay? I am not in Mohamed Bouazizi's league. What we have in common is that we didn't need the internet to achieve anything, but it sure did help. Mohamed Bouazizi didn't need the internet to ignite the Jasmine Revolution and the Arab Spring. He needed a gas can and a match. I didn't need the internet to find my way to a bitchin' spring break experience. But in each of those cases, the internet sure did help. Technology rarely creates behaviors with intrinsic value or normative force. Technology accelerates human behavior. We come to technology with all of our pathologies and our intricacies, and our sacred and our profane, and technology puts those things on an express train to the future. The internet is where we connect with the rest of the world. Technology gives us unprecedented power to examine and redefine all that we are. And what we are discovering is that we are one people, one global people. There is no them. It's all just us. We're all in this together. We are not the 99%. We are the 100%. The only thing that matters in human existence are human relationships. We are each here for such a brief period. The toys we collect don't matter. The very concept of money is losing its legitimacy with every passing year. The things in our lives are all so much window dressing. What's left? What's left is human relationships and the love with which you fill them. When you love your fellow human, you do not casually spray him with pepper spray or shoot a can of tear gas at his head. When you love your fellow man, you do not humiliate him to the point where self-immolation is the better option. For you entrepreneurs, your technologies will win if they help people communicate and love and relate, or at least get through the tedious parts of their lives more efficiently and more quickly so they can get on with the good parts, the lovely parts, like family and friends and love. Look, we're human beings. Before Angry Birds, we played games with balls and sticks. Without text messages, we flirted live and in person. Without the internet, the oppressed have sought liberty and hatched plots to achieve it in smoky cafes and back alleys. But give us a little technology to move those things along a little more effectively, a little more efficiently, and you don't just change the world, you save it. One of the last things Mohamed Bouazizi did before he died is to write a love letter to his mother. He wrote it on Facebook. Help righteous people make love and war, and you're not a game changer, you're a goddamn savior. Thank you.